It is time for Arts Live and Local. This is Carol, your host. And I have a full show. Thanks for being here, everyone. I want to be among the many KMUN programmers to dedicate my show to a very good friend, especially a friend of the arts. And, of course, that's Royal Nebaker. And to his whole family. Royal physically left us last Saturday, almost a week ago, and I want to let you know that tomorrow there is a memorial gathering for him at the LDS Church in Seaside, 1403 South Wahana. I'll check on that address for you if you need. And it's at 2 p.m., and if you cared about New Royal and or his family, you are more than welcome to come and share in that gathering. We miss him already.
To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time. Season, turn, 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 and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together. To everything, turn, 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 there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time of love, a time of hate, a time of war, a time of peace, a time you may embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. To everything, turn, 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 there is a sea. A time to love, a time to hate, a time of peace. I swear it's not too late. To everything, turn, 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 there is a season and a time to every purpose.
And it is this time of year. It's the turning of the seasons. And we'll be hearing more about that next week. Right now, I have three guests in the studio and a fan going because it's 75 degrees. That's outside. Inside, I'm not even sure what it is. So, very exciting event this weekend, and it is all weekend. It starts tonight, actually, and most of it is going to be taking place at the Liberty Theater in 12th and Commercial. This is the 2014 Northwest Symposium for Alternative Process Photography. And if you just listen to the words, alternative process photography. And my guests are going to tell you about their own particular alternative processes. But in the meantime, I wanted to welcome all three of them. I have Doug Etheridge. Hi, Doug.
Hello.
And Diana Bloomfield.
Hello.
Yeah, you do have to speak. It's radio, you know. Can't just smile in this one. And Bill Vaccaro. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Okay. And I have seen the work of at least two of them because I am a great appreciator of the Lightbox Photographic Gallery, which we have right here in Astoria. And if you haven't been there, you must go there because Michael and Chelsea Granger, who are the proprietors, have wonderful shows. They're a top-quality gallery. As a matter of fact, the folks in Portland sort of adopted them and include them in various things because their quality is so high. And they're right on 1045 Marine, so they're right on Marine Drive between 10th and 11th. So this symposium is starting tonight at the gallery, and it's actually for, tonight is for people who are taking part in the whole weekend. But if you haven't signed up for it yet and you are interested, you can head on over there and check it out and sign up for the weekend. And then the Liberty all day tomorrow. Tomorrow evening they will be showing Altered Views, an art show. It's almost during Art Walk. It's 6 to 9. Most of the galleries are 5 to 8. And it's a juried group show of alternative process work. And then Sunday they're back at the Liberty. So this is an amazing opportunity to get together with people, whether you're a beginner or an advanced person. Get together with folks who have been doing this work for a long time, know a lot, and are interested and willing to share. So I'm going to ask, and we haven't figured out which one, I'm going to throw it out to you folks, wants to tell us a little bit about this Northwest Symposium. Does this go on every year?
I think it's every 2 years.
Yes, every other year there's a meeting of this organization, which is primarily based in the Seattle area, and then they've started to work with folks in the Vancouver, British Columbia area.
Oh.
And this year I think the organizers were talking with Michael Granger at Lightbox, and Michael, as anybody in Astoria knows, is an enthusiastic kind of guy.
Yep.
And they decided to put this together in Astoria to bring something here a little different than what the group has done in the past.
Nice. So, but it's, I know both of you have been here before. Well, I know Diana's been here before because
I've
met
you. Yes, I was here last May.
Yes.
Michael and Chelsea had me out here, and it's just...
You gave a lecture.
I did. It was a good friend of mine lived out here who died, who'd been tremendously helpful to me in the gum bichromate printing process, is just what I do. And so it was wonderful, and when Michael invited me again, I jumped at the chance, so...
And anybody who just heard Diana speak can tell she is not from around here, not from anywhere north, as a matter of fact, although you do come from North Carolina.
North Carolina, that's right.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry.
It's
that
the
doesn't
Piedmont
qualify
area
you.
Of North Carolina. Oh. So. Actually, very close to Virginia.
That's so great, because we hear a lot of Piedmont blues around here. So, so as long as I've picked on you, tell us a little bit about the whole thing, or anyone can jump in, and then about
what
your work is.
Well, I think these alternative processes, they're called alternative because they're an alternative to, I guess, digital and all the sort of 21st century technology, although I utilize some of that in my work. But so they're really 19th century historical printing processes, and I think a lot of people wonder why anybody would do it today when everything is so quick and easy and with Photoshop and smartphones and apps, and why would you take days to make something? But
I liked your quote, actually, how and why. And I put the emphasis on
I get that
why
asked a
does
lot.
A photographer evolve from documentary work to sheer ambiguity where nothing is literal, less truth is revealed, more questions than answers?
Yes.
Why?
I started out as a very straightforward black and white documentary photographer where I thought I was telling the truth, and it was really my truth, nobody else's. And the older I got, the grayer things became, you know, to me, the less, the more ambiguous, I guess, everything became. So this seemed like the perfect opportunity. Plus, I hated working in a traditional darkroom. So you can do all these processes in ambient light, and their contact printing processes where your image is only as big as your negative or plate. So there's no enlarging, and you can do everything, as I said, in ambient light, which I loved.
So what is it, what are your, quote, alternative processes?
Well, I started out with learning platinum palladium, and I was, I think maybe, Doug, you're a platinum, is that right?
Right.
Yeah, and I wasn't all that great with it, I didn't think. I never thought I was.
Well, okay, now this is where there's an aside. What's platinum palladium? Just jump in there.
Well, platinum palladium is basically, again, all these processes come from the 19th century, and it's a process by which you, using watercolor paper, essentially, mix an emulsion. It's a chemistry project. All these, I mean, they're all science projects in
a
lot
really
of ways.
Are.
It's, and when things go wrong, you have to sort of have a chemistry mind, if you will. It's like, well, why isn't that working? Well, maybe it's because the water's contaminated. Well, how could that be? So platinum palladium is a process by which you mix a solution that contains a platinum palladium metal, and you mix that with ferric oxalate, which or oxide, something
iron,
like that, oxalate.
Yeah.
And it makes it light sensitive, and you you smear this stuff on a piece of paper, and you put a negative over the top of it. You expose it to a lot of ultraviolet light. The sun works, as one example. And magically, somehow this makes a print.
Okay, so hold now. I want to go back to Diana.
Okay.
Why? I mean, the way he described, smear this on and put it in the
sun. Yeah, you brush it on, and it has this wonderful tactile quality.
Why,
and
why didn't it grab you?
Well, I think that I probably was not, Doug mentions that it's really very scientific, and I'm not. I'm a very intuitive printer. I always have been. So for me, I never was, how shall we say this, anal enough to make a really good platinum print. So I started combining that platinum with other processes like cyanotype. I started working with pinhole cameras.
Cyanotype, does that use cyanide?
No, cyanotype is...
it's like a blueprint.
Yeah,
I mean, cyanotypes basically are blueprints.
So there, when you mix it
there
with...
There is cyanide in the chemistry.
Right.
But, you
so
know,
we have
it's
a scientist
not,
here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, people out there in the audience, I'm just as in the dark as you. And this is why, if you have any interest, you know, everybody's shooting digital, as you say now. But it's really fantastic to learn some of the background and learn it from people who have been studying it for a while. This is skipping all that stuff. You don't have to do it.
Well, one of the things that I found, I teach a little bit in the Seattle area at Photo Center Northwest from time to time, and I have students come in who are university students who are kind of like, well, you know, we're done with that digital thing. We want to do something by hand again.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
and I think that's the attraction for most of us, is it's
handcraft. I think we like to see the artist's hand. I think
exactly.
There's a wonderful, I always say, I think I actually have written down someplace, I like to know what goes into the making of my images.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, you know, from start to finish. And there is this wonderful, I think, imperfection, too, about it, which, again, as you get older, you realize things just aren't
that's
perfect.
What we're about.
So I feel like the images sort of mesh with the the process itself.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, it's interesting because in the music world, and I'm not focusing on this myself personally, but a lot of people going back to LPs. Not to 8-track, mind you, but to LP, to discs.
Sure.
So records, because there's a realness to it.
That's right. Yeah.
But I like the idea of seeing the hand of the artist
right.
in it. Speaking of which, Bill, the Things She Left Behind project that you brought here, and you said that was last year or when?
Yeah, that was last July. I had a solo show at Lightbox.
Right, and I remember that. And why don't you give us a quick run on that one, what it was and why?
It's the processes that I used were wet plate collodion, which is this 19th century process that was developed like in the early 1850s and was extremely popular for about 30 years until some other people developed what's now known as the silver gelatin process, which eventually evolved into, you know, regular commercial film.
And why? Was it easier? Was it less poisonous or toxic, or what was the appeal?
For wet plates, it was a lot faster.
Okay.
The process prior to that was daguerreotype, which was the first major process, but it had a lot of flaws. One, it was you only got one of a kind image, and it took forever to make a plate because you had to polish it. It could only be silver, and you had to use mercury, which is very dangerous.
That's what I was saying about toxic.
It's very toxic. Mm-hmm. So wet plate was less toxic, although it does use silver nitrate, and it's a lot faster. The beauty about wet plate was that within a period of about a half an hour, you could have yourself a usable, either a usable tin type or amber type or a glass negative that you could then contact print and make multiple prints with, which you couldn't do with daguerreotype.
Mm-hmm. So did each time the process, like now when it jumped into digital, do you think speed, because I'm thinking digital is like tick, 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 was speed a big part of a lot of them? And maybe as we get older, as Diana is saying, we're slowing down.
Speed and convenience.
Yeah,
you know,
convenience.
A lot of, I mean, some of the processes, like what plate is, when you think of the guys, you know, wandering around the West with the stuff on the back of a mule, it's a little astounding because it's a very cumbersome process. So, you know, everybody, like I think every other sort of invention, you know, it's sort of like, how can we make this more convenient or more repeatable or, you know, more appealing to a broader spectrum of people who don't have to spend, you know, dedicate your life to learning how to code a plate, you know, and now we're digital, cell phones, you know, anybody can take a picture, which is cool.
And you don't have to have a dedicated space.
Yeah,
you know, to do anything
for sure,
which is pretty wonderful. And the work that I do is really multi-layered gum bichromate, and so I make digital negatives. So I use that 21st century technology for that, which is just incredible to be it. Because I, you know, before that came about, if people used gum bichromate years ago, they were using a camera with different filters in it to generate these three separation negatives, and it must have just been terrible.
Right.
I can't imagine. So I utilize that. I think it's pretty wonderful.
Yeah, the process that I use for printing is called Zeotype, and it was actually based on a 19th century process that was experimented with by this Italian who worked in the Austrian army during the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Oh yeah,
and it didn't really take off, but there were some people who had some interest in it. And then in the 80s and 90s, people started going back to it and trying to perfect the process. Because what the original developer, his name was Pizzighelli, was trying to do was trying to come up with a palladium process that would that was a printout process, meaning that it would develop as it was being exposed to the to UV light, and he had varying degrees of success with it. And then this other photographer, Michael Ware in Great Britain, he developed it even further. And then finally, Dick Sullivan, who is one of the founders of Bostick and Sullivan in Santa Fe, New Mexico, experimented further with the wear process and developed this process whereby you could make a palladium pop print, pop meaning printout process, print that's controlled solely by humidity. So it's probably one of the newest of the alternative process.
Hey, wait a minute. Humidity. I think we're in the right place. Okay.
actually, and since Bill's from Chicago, you know, I mean, where better could you be?
Yeah.
Wait, now you live in Chicago?
Yeah, I'm originally from Buffalo, New York, but I live in Chicago. I've lived there for a long time.
So you managed, that's why you kept your accent. You went from upstate New York to Midwest.
To the Midwest, yeah.
Flatty. Mm-hmm. Well, this is quite a variety we have here. So you came in just for the weekend.
Yes.
And Diana, you live in North Carolina
North
now?
North Carolina, right, in Raleigh.
You're the only relative local? You're in Seattle area?
I'm in Tahuya, Washington, which is a little town on Hood Canal.
Oh, very pretty.
Yeah, okay. So I live 18 miles from nowhere.
Well, I live.
Wait, I think I live 18 miles from nowhere.
No, I live 23 miles from Astoria, which is not nowhere. It's the center of the universe.
And I live 2.5 blocks from Lake Michigan.
Oh, there you go. I just want to mention that we also, this weekend, these are my esteemed guests today, Diana Bloomfield, and is it Diana? Yes, Bloomfield, and Bill Vaccaro, and Doug Etheridge. But also, not but, and we have Susan DeWitt and S. Gail Stevens, and also the keynote speaker, who is Mark Osterman. And we're not going to go into too much about them except to say...
Mark Osterman is currently the process historian at the Eastman House, the George Eastman House in Rochester, New York.
That'd be Kodak, folks.
Been there for about 10 years. He and his wife are these masters at alternative processes. His wife, France Scully. And he teaches a wide array of different processes at the Eastman House. I have actually learned dry plate collodion negatives from him. Recently, I was back there to learn how to make 35-millimeter daguerreotypes.
Oh, my.
Using a different daguerreotype method called the Becquerel method that does not involve using mercury.
Oh, nice.
And I'm
this
going
is big boon.
Well, this is like dental work where they're pulling out all your fillings and putting in new...
Right. Uh-huh.
Okay. 35 millimeters.
I'm looking at the clock and thinking we don't have much time, so I just wanted to check in with the three of you. Has photography always been your art form?
Yes.
I started in music, actually, and then got involved in photography when I went to college, and have pretty much made my career in various
still
photography,
doing any
video.
Music, though?
I do a little music once in a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, Diana.
I have an MFA in creative writing, so I'm
a writer.
But I found the rejection to be overwhelming, so I went back to photography, which was just only slightly different from that rejection-wise.
And I've been doing. I'm self-taught. I've been doing it since the early 70s.
But all in photography.
My day job was as a librarian, public librarian.
Okay.
Until recently.
That was my next short question, and it can be just a yes or no. You've already given the answer. Mm-hmm. Are you able to earn a living, as it were, in photography / the arts?
I'm happy if I come out even every year.
Okay.
I feel like I could do a lot more commercial work, which I choose not to, but I could. And so I think you could. I teach a lot of workshops.
I was fortunate to sort of stumble into the world of video production. So I started a video production company in the Seattle area, which was became successful. And so I sort of funded my fine art photography habit by working other things, but still kind of in the
realm.
general realm. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And for me, it's basically been a resounding no. So buy my prints. Please.
Please buy Bill's prints.
Oh, yes. Buy mine, too.
Okay. Yes, I should
and
say.
Buy mine.
Okay. So here's the deal. The actual... this fabulous festival almost, the Northwest Symposium for Alternative Process Photography is going on all weekend, and you must register for that, and you can do that by going over to Lightbox Photographic Gallery, and this evening they will have their first gathering, and then all day tomorrow and on Sunday, and these are all part of the workshops. But also tomorrow evening, it will be open to the public to see the show, Altered Views. And yes, there will be artwork for sale as well. So thank you so much.
That show is juried by Gail Stevens, by the way.
Great.
Who's one of the speakers.
Great. Right. We did give her. Okay. Well, welcome all to Astoria. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you for having us.
I'm so glad that you, you know, that I really appreciate that photographic Lightbox, of whose I'm wearing their t-shirt, as a matter of fact. I love this t-shirt.
Yes.
Lightbox has put photography big time on the map.
They really
put
have.
Astoria
pretty incredible.
On the map in the photography world. So thank you.
They're great people to work with.
They are. Yes, Michael they are. And Aunt Chelsea. And thank you so much. And thank you three for coming in. Again, my guests, I'm going to make sure I get them in order. Doug Etheridge and Diana Bloomfield and Bill Vaccaro. And check them out. You can check them out on the web as well. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks.
Have a
Thank
great
you.
Weekend.
Thanks.
Okay. And this is Carol with Arts Live and Local here at KMUN Astoria. And if all is going well, my next guest is out in the rotunda. And I've got Jorge Gutierrez to tell us about the festival happening tomorrow. And Acoustica is going to be playing. So let's have a listen. KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook.
Vida, si tuviera cuatro vidas si eran para ti. Contento moriría por ti. Alma, si te llevas mi alma, contento moriría por ti. Ser, si te llevas mi ser, contento moriría por ti. Te llevas mi alma, mi vida, mi ser. Si tuviera cuatro vidas si eran para ti.
To the music of our local Acoustica World Music, Cuatro Vidas, with There it is, Cuatro Vidas, just like I said. And that's Dolores Villarreal and John Orr, Dave Ambrose, and Matt Crichton on this recording. It's a slightly different lineup right now. And my guest is here to tell you about a very exciting festival happening this weekend. Hi, Jorge.
Hi, Carol.
Oops, how about I turn on your mic? There we go. Hi.
Hi, Carol.
And I ran into Jorge yesterday. Actually, my dog did first, but then I did. And I was surprised because I guess I hadn't met you, and I was picturing someone else. So I am delighted mm-hmm. to know that you are. Now, are you like the director of the?
Yes, I'm the executive director.
Executive director mm-hmm. of the Lower Columbia Hispanic Council. And they are sponsoring the Hispanic Heritage Festival tomorrow in Seaside at the Community Center, the Bob Chisholm Community Center, from 1 to 4. That's 1225 Avenue A. That's east of the highway. And I understand it's a kickoff for National Hispanic Heritage Month, which I never heard of.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a national American holiday, and it starts September 15th, and it goes through October 15th.
What a coincidence. It happens to be Mexicans' Independence
exactly.
Day.
Exactly. So it coincides with, there are several countries that all celebrate their independence right around that same time. Don't ask me to name all of them.
No, that's okay. I only knew about Mexico.
It's Mexico, Chile, El Salvador, Guatemala, and a couple others
okay.
that I can't remember right now.
Okay, that's fine. So what's going to be happening tomorrow then?
So we're having a fiesta to celebrate. And as you mentioned, we're going to have Acoustica Play, which we would like to thank the Telecom Foundation for making that happen.
That's us.
Yes, that is you.
Oh, good.
And we will also be having music by DJ Sonido Eres. And we're also going to have a Zumba presentation
yeah.
from, it'll be by Nayeli Dalida from the Astoria Arts and Movement Center.
Yeah, that's going to be great.
Yes, so it'll be from 1 to 4, and we're kind of staggering the entertainment throughout. There will also be a kids activities section. There will be pottery and a few other arts and crafts for the
really?
Kids.
Oh, how nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
There will be also, the event is free. Mm-hmm. And there will be food for purchase. And it's really great because we actually got food from a lot of different restaurants. They donated the food. So you
lovely.
Get a chance to try different restaurants in one place. And I'm just going to really quickly name those restaurants. It's La Cabaña de Raya, El Trio Loco, Taqueria Bravo, The Stand, and Taqueria Guadalajara, and Rosas Enchiladas.
It sounds so much nicer when you say it. Okay. Yum. That's wonderful. And I hear there's a little something to drink there, too.
Yes, huh? There will be adult beverages as well as Mexican Coke and other soft drinks.
Mexican Coke. I don't know what that is, but it sounds a little scary.
It's the ones that comes in. It comes
sugary.
In, yes, they're a lot more sugary, yeah. and they come in the traditional glass bottles. They're a lot more fun to drink.
Oh, I see. No mojitos, though, huh?
No
That's
mojitos,
from,
unfortunately.
Cuba.
Yes.
Right, right. So the whole festival is a benefit, actually, for the Lower Columbia Hispanic Council. You're selling raffle tickets as well?
That is correct. So it's part benefit and part just to raise awareness and do some community outreach. But yes, we are having a raffle. The tickets are only $5, and you can win prizes from Cannery Pier Hotel, Haystack Lodgings, Bowie Beer, Astoria Co-op, Marcos Custom Bodywork, dance lessons from the Astoria Arts and Movement Center, Fort George Brewery, High Life Adventures, Sunset Empire Parks and Recreation, and McMenamins. So, and just
wow.
thank you to all our sponsors for donating some very generous prizes.
Right. You did very well bringing the community together on this. This is wonderful. Can you tell us in a short time, what is the purpose of the Lower Columbia Hispanic Council? And how do you say it in Spanish?
El Consejo Hispano de Lower Columbia. Almost the same.
Lower Columbia.
So we're a nonprofit organization, and we do various... we have various programs. I'll just quickly list a couple. We mm-hmm. do a GED program that we partner with the college, and I teach that. It's a Spanish GED class. We help people with their taxes. We do financial counseling. We have an IDA program, which helps people save money for higher education and to start their own business. We do a lot of referrals to social service agencies, and we do translation and interpreting services.
And I presume you're all bilingual.
Yes, so that's correct.
So people can use the services. Wow, sounds terrific. Mm-hmm. How does somebody get in touch with you? Suppose they can't make it to the festival tomorrow, poor them. How do they find you?
You can Google our website, Lower Columbia Hispanic Council, and there's information on there. You can also call us at 503-325-4547. You can always stop by. We're at 2021 Marine Drive. That's in the OSU Seafood Center, Suite 101, right across from the hospital.
Okay, excellent. Probably good to give a call first, because you don't have... What are your hours? Are they mixed?
Well, it's 9 to 5, but I'm the only person there, so sometimes I'm out running errands.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah. So it's a good
probably better to call.
Check in or stick a note under the door or something like
indeed.
That. Jorge, how long have you been in this area?
Actually, it's going to be 2 years in October.
Where'd you come from?
I am originally from, well, I was actually born in Mexico, but I grew up in Southern California. More recently, I was living in L.A. for the past 10 years. And I moved here with my partner almost 2 years ago.
You came from L.A. to Astoria.
Yes,
how
indeed.
You doing, Jorge?
I am loving it.
All
absolutely
right.
Love it.
Okay, shh, don't tell everybody. Okay, thank you so much for coming in. Jorge Gutierrez from the Lower Columbia Hispanic Council. Again, this is tomorrow. That is the 13th of September from 1 until 4 at the Bob Chisholm Community Center, 1225 Avenue A in Seaside. And you can just come at any time and stay for as long as you can. And this is the Hispanic Heritage Festival kicking off the month. And Acústica will play and DJ Sonido Eres. And there's Zumba. I'm figuring you can do your Zumba to Acústica. Or to the DJ, too. It sounds like fun. And food and, quote, adult beverages. I like that. I heard margaritas were going to be there myself. But and all kinds of good things. Thanks so much for,
thank you for
doing
me.
It and for coming in.
All
okay.
Right. Thank you, Carol.
You bet. And I have another guest here right now in the studio. And in order to give a little more time, I'm just going to start grilling him immediately. Now, we need to be kind because I just learned that he's actually a radio virgin. So, this is your first time on the radio?
Yes. Hello, Carol.
In Astoria or anywhere?
Anywhere. I've been interviewed on camera, but it's not live. So, this is actually the first.
Yes. Wow. Well, welcome. And now that you've done it once, you're fine. And you've got a sidekick with you, too. Who's this?
Yes, this is Sun.
And what's your name?
Hello, is my boy here?
So what's your name, honey?
Hello.
Sun. What's your name?
Sun.
Sun is your name.
Yeah.
Okay.
S-A-N-H.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's true. People can figure out. You folks have various and sundry names. Tell us... Well, I'll tell everybody. You are opening tomorrow evening in a show called Form Pattern Light. And this is Lam Quang. Is that how you say
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Lam,
is that Lam Quang?
Lam Quang, yes.
And your wife, Kestrel Gates.
Correct.
And together you have, now I never know how to say this. I know how to write it, but I don't know how to say your paper lights. How do you say it?
Would
you just spell
it's a
it
kind
out?
Of a play on words called it's hi-hi. It's it's kind of made up palindrome/mirror word.
So it's capital H, small I, capital H.
Correct. Yeah.
Ah, okay. So now I got the trick. I never did.
Yeah. It confuses people sometimes,
well,
quite a bit.
That's good. They look more carefully. Tell us what it is you do, though. I don't know. Can you describe it? Because I've seen it, and it's just gorgeous stuff.
Well, thank you.
I don't know how to describe it.
It's handmade paper that we make. And usually I make the paper and stretch it onto armatures that we make out of wire. And to create lamps, and usually our forms are flowers to pods to sometimes I've made insects and different creatures as well.
They're large.
Some of them, very can be 4 or 5 inches in diameter or so to 36, 37 inches. And I've made life-size crocodiles and,
oh, wow,
and human form as well.
That sounds like fun.
So it ranges, it varies quite a bit.
Are these all what you're doing? Are they all end up as lighting?
Yes, they are. I love the way our forms light up. When I first started out making paper, I just wanted to see what it looks like behind light. Mm-hmm. And to give it more light, I ended up waxing the paper to give it the translucency. So it becomes, you can see it more. And in that, when I'm working with the paper, then I have to be a lot more careful, because when you put light behind something, you see everything, every little flaw. So I have to be a lot more careful.
How do you make the paper? Is that something you can give us in a?
It's a fairly simple process. Of course, the paper making, handmade paper process, it's been around for thousands of years, mm-hmm, and it evolved from China to the Middle East and all over the place. But it's basically what I use is cotton fiber for more absorbency, and abaca, which is a banana bark from the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And usually they make it out for rope, mm-hmm, at the more premium fibers they use for paper. So the combination of strength and absorbency creates this really nice paper diet. Mm. We work, and then my wife Kestrel usually paints on them, and we design them together. And my wife paints them.
Paints them
from
designs or colors or
all over everything from just really simple, giving it a flower form of colors, fading colors, using airbrush to hand paint. She's doing a lot more hand painting and patterns and. And such. For this show at River Sea, we're just really expanding our own work a lot. Usually we stretch it on armature. This time we really just playing with textured paper, cutting into paper when it's still wet and rolling it, forming it. So the paper has just letting it dry and naturally and has curves, and so basically textiles, almost like textiles.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Yeah. But you're still using it with light.
Correct.
That's all part
and
of the.
And all the, like, okay, when you have like 2 or 3 layers of textured paper and lighting it from behind and trying to conceal what the light bulb behind making it glow, And it's a very exciting show for us. This is the first time we're doing a show with Yoshi.
And that was the other. This is a 3-person show. Yoshi Aoki, whose work we've seen before at River Sea Gallery. He is a metal sculptor, and in the past I've known he's worked with metal and wood. I'm not sure what he's doing for this show, but I'm sure it's going to be absolutely gorgeous.
Yes, it's metal. It's metal and wood.
Yeah,
and it's amazing how his work is matching our work, mm-hmm, this kind of work,
mm-hmm,
with our work really well, and it's really exciting.
So it's exciting for you to be working with someone new as well as with a new process.
Correct.
Nice.
Yeah. So we've been frantically putting it together and finally finishing about 20 minutes before installation yesterday. So,
okay. Well, let's mention again, tomorrow evening is Art Walk in Astoria, and Lam Guang and Kestrel Gates are with Hi Hi.
Yes.
Lights and Yoshi Aoki are... their show is called Form Pattern Light.
Good.
And also in the alcove is Carrie Moore at River Sea. Imogen Gallery is featuring Lyndon with her show Conveyance and some very gorgeous stuff. The Old Town Framing has a doodle-off. Leave it to Dulcie, a doodle-off where you can do your doodling, anyone of all ages. And they will put it right up there. And Tempo Gallery, we heard from Marga Stanley last week. She's doing Birds of the Weather and Moonshine. This is all between 5 and 8 tomorrow evening. And there are a number of other galleries and spaces showing as well. And we're going to hear in a minute from the Fort George folks. And so I want to thank you. And I wish next time you come, both of you will, all three of you will come. All four, too, yes. Depending on whom else you're having a show with. Yeah. And we'll have some more time. So
thank you so much
for coming in, yeah. And congratulations on the show. It sounds great.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. And I will put on a little bit of music. You Knew Me When. And they were on Albert's show this morning, and they did a fabulous job. And I've played this before, but I need this song. It's called Slow Down. They're playing tonight at Vino Manzanita, and tomorrow night the big show is at the Peninsula Performing Arts Center in Long Beach on the 7 o'clock. Just want to remind you that this is the last weekend for the Astor Street Opera Company Shanghai, Friday and Saturday nights at 7, and Wong Long as twins. It's going to be fun. The 19th is Topsy Turvy. This group that you're hearing right now, You Knew Me When, playing tonight and tomorrow night, and Lightbox. And North Coast Symphonic Band is looking for clarinetists, trumpeters, and trumpetists, trumpeters, trumpetisms, and percussion folks. Like to bang. And tomorrow night, the Cannon Beach History Center, 6 to 8, Maggie Kitson, Dave Quentin, and Richard Tomasian. Dots and Doodles is having amazing workshops going on all month and next month. Ellen Zimmet, I think, is the one to get in touch with, or you can just check over at Dots. Tomorrow, from 10 to 3, Ellen's doing a mixed media workshop, and then Thursday, Tim Maswelli is doing a framing workshop. Triple Divide, a documentary on fracking, going to be at the Columbian Theater at 4 p.m. Astoria Art Walk, Lower Columbia Hispanic Council, Voodoo, singer-songwriter Robin Basior, and she's very good. Heard her at Kala. And Redmond Hall in Skamakaway, an exhibit all over the place with Judy Vandermaten and friends. Skamakaway Grange has wine tasting and live auction, the Shelburne Farm to Table. and Sunday Fort George Old Wave, Sunday Afternoon Live Flute, Joshua Romatowsk and Viola Aaron Konitz at 2 o'clock, Tillamook Latimer Quilt, Night Thoughts, and Voices of Labor, Making a Living in Clatsop County. What a concept. That's from 2 to 4 at the Judge Guy Boyington Building, and it's a panel discussion. Should be very, very interesting. Don't forget on Tuesday, District 5, folks, please vote. And we got things going on all over town. Yes, we do. The Sou'wester has music on Wednesday, Jesse Lortz. Kala on Thursday, Eric Sky. Patchy Sanders is at the Adrift. And Bill's Tavern has the Floating Glass. And don't forget about the Wing Nuts. I just found them. Bunch of old codgers. They said it, not me. Hey, right now in the studio, I have non-old codgers. One of them, as a matter of fact, doesn't even come close. Somebody's got a cell phone that rings. That's kind of fun. So I have here three wonderful historians, all very fine artists. We have two painters and one woodworker. So the woodworker is Tim Kennedy. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
Have you ever been on this show with me?
I have never been on your show,
Carol. I didn't think so. Holy cow. And we only have a few minutes, but we're going to pack it in. Roger Hayes is one of the painters. You all know Roger.
Hi, Carol.
He tries to not say much when he's on the air, but let me tell you, if you get one of his written pieces, you'll understand that he has a lot to say. Right, Roger?
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to let him do the talking, though. And Natalie Orr is the youngest of the lot.
Hello.
And Natalie has been here many times.
Good to be here.
Throughout her years for many things. So it's very exciting. They're here because they're part of Art Walk. Tomorrow evening, they're at the Fort George Showroom. And I have lots of notes written down. But first, I just want to say, you have a couple of other woodworkers coming.
A couple of other woodworkers are participating. Jason Banks and Simo Ranta.
And they're both Astoria people, too?
They're both Astoria people also, yeah.
This is fantastic. Yeah. Uh-huh. I love that we are so rich in the arts that you can put this. So who put this show together?
Tim, actually. Tim actually invited me to do the visual art piece, so I just curated and added Natalie. So it's really kind of Tim and Natalie.
So it's...
Works for me.
Well, I've collaborated with Natalie, so we've done some painting together.
Yeah, yes, and Roger, you have been collaborated with Natalie before,
right? Yeah, we did a show at the Kala in 2012, I think. And that was with Lulu Quinn and Eva Kirk.
Okay, so three young artists, and you were curating. And you work with a lot of different populations also, which I really appreciate because you bring more and more people. I mean, they're already making art, but you lift it up so that the rest of us can see what's going on.
It's a democratic approach.
I like that. I wish... never mind, we won't get political here. But Tim, what made you... Where did this all come from, and what made you think it would be a good idea to have...
Well, this particular space at the Fort George Showroom, Roger invited me to share with him this space in March, I believe it was, at that space. And my work is generally large furniture pieces, heavy, large. They do well to be out in the middle of an open space. And I just, after that, I thought it was really successful to have some of my work in that place. So I set this up for this September date back from last spring. Roger, I'm not occupying any wall space. So
perfect.
Yeah. So again, we're kind of trading off there.
So that's a very large space. Are you actually having the three of you have your furniture spread all around?
We'll be kind of out in the middle of the open space. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of my work is an element I like to work with as far as material is local salvaged fur. That's first what brought me to Astoria. Before I lived here, I used to come here and procure salvaged timber and incorporate it into houses. And then as these pieces became smaller, I would incorporate them into furniture pieces.
So first... I heard the word timber, You know, at first I was thinking of trees, but then I'm going to salvaged from old buildings.
Yeah, this is all salvaged from old buildings.
Okay.
And it's got the telltale marks of black stain marks where fasteners used to be.
Oh, I know it well.
And it's all pre-cured. There's no real drying process that needs to happen. And it's already got a personality. I love working with this stuff because it's already got this great personality.
Nice. And are these pieces for sale?
They are. All four of these pieces that I have are for sale.
Okay. And the other two gentlemen as well?
Everybody's pieces are for sale, yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for setting this up. And Natalie, I really enjoyed, I jotted down just a couple of notes from what you had written because I really enjoyed them. I hope I understood them correctly. That's the this is what I understood anyway. Accepting the artistic self as a foundation to work from. And I really like that concept because when we send children to school, we put a kind of a, blinders and everything and face this way and sit this way and all of that. And you're asking, wait a minute, let's go deeper. So, and when you see with new experience, acknowledge, recognize, approach, and embrace the unknown as a lost treasure.
Yeah, so that kind of ties into this whole Goonies theme, I guess. So our story is kind of like a pirate's paradise in many ways. Lots of things to discover. And I like to apply that inwardly as well. Just whatever you got, make something, make a beat, make a song, make a painting, you know, and let the meaning flow out from there, you know. It continues to grow as part of like this human experience that we share what we create, and it creates more creation. Not to be redundant, but.
Well, I think the two things we wrote actually kind of echo each other in a lot of ways. Like even talking about the Akashic Library, like you are very much in this kind of concept of things that kind of are, you know, shelved together. You know, there's this synergy between when people work together. So that's why thought it was really important to have a collaboration. That's kind of one of the things I mean when you have a collaboration.
So when you say collaboration, though, I still wasn't quite sure. Does that mean you actually work on an art piece together or talk about it? And tell us, Natalie.
Well, it's like a kind of one force propels the other, and then the other tries to bring it back and make some sense of it. And so that includes discussion and just being parts of each other's lives, but more also into the art realm with an actual piece of painting of art. And so there's a couple pieces that we work together on. One is this kind of bluer patterned piece, and it was really precise when I got it, and I was nervous, but I just kind of gave it my all, and there's definitely some echoes of what it started as, but it's turned into something completely different, and I guess the similar goes for the second piece, which is a little bit more fire-inspired.
And how does this, because, you know, when I was reading this, I was seeing this not just as making art or product, but a whole way of living life.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. My art is really just kind of like the foam on the top, because that's kind of how I live my life, is just learning to accept and work with all the beauty and truth around. Yeah.
Do you still live here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Over on First Street. Really.
Okay. Yeah, because you grew up here, but I wasn't sure whether you were going to stick around, and we're certainly thrilled that you have and
Me
are.
Me too.
Yeah. And part of that, I think, is, again, we were talking with the photography folks, the idea of having mentors and having people around who are experienced and willing, and not just willing, but wanting to be open to young people who have that sense, and sounds like you've had it for quite a while.
Yeah, building bridges and really traveling them and enjoying the scenery. Yeah, it's good.
I like that. Do you ever put poetry with your
I actually have a book. Uh-huh. So if anyone comes to the show, they can just ask me about that.
Okay, well, I'm not surprised.
Natalie's far more articulate than I am.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, it just sort of flows there, so I'm just going to check and see. We have another show coming up right now, and I'm hoping that it's there. And this is KMUN Astoria, KTCB, Tillamook, CoastRadio.org, wherever you are in the world. And my guests right here, Natalie Orr and Tim Kennedy and Roger Hayes. And their show is tomorrow evening from 5 to 8 at Fort George Showroom. Is the show up already?
Not quite.
Okay.
It will be by
tomorrow.
4:59.
Promises, promises. Thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thank you.
And congratulations on the show.
That's great. Thanks.